Welcome to a Christmas edition of Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from holidays past. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Later in this hour, comedy from The Great Gildersleeve, but first, drama from Grand Central Station with the story Miracle for Christmas. Their annual broadcast of the story on CBS, heard on December 24th, 1949.
Now, for the sixth consecutive year, Pillsbury Mills of Minneapolis presents with pride Grand Central Station's traditional Christmas play, a drama you will long remember. After the train from Albany pulled in, no one, not a single person, actually saw the young man with soft brown hair and soft brown eyes come through the gate. Still unseen, he walks the length of the great waiting room, now strangely tranquil as travel ebbs on Christmas Eve. Quietly, he goes out the door, down the street, and then up the broad marble stairs of the hospital. When the girl at the switchboard turns to him...
What can I do for you, sir?
Without saying a word, he gives her a card. She's startled by the name on it and instantly announces him to the hospital superintendent.
Dr. Mason is here to see you.
Mason? Dr. Mason who applied for an internship?
Yes, Dr. Garrett, it is Dr. Mason from Albany.
But that's impossible.
Shall I ask him about the telegram?
No, I'll do it. Send him in, please.
Yes, sir. Dr. Garrett will see you, sir. First door to the left.
Dr. Garrett. Dr. Mason? You are Dr. Mason? I'm sorry that I was delayed, Dr. Garrett.
But just 10 minutes ago, I...
Yes. 10 minutes ago, you received a telegram.
Why, that's right.
I know.
From your mother.
I know.
But, man, I... Why, look at it. It says that you...
That I was killed. Do you mind if I tear up that telegram, Dr. Garrett?
Well, I don't understand. I was so unnerved by that wire. I'd counted so much on your being here tonight. Christmas Eve. A night always busy with calls.
You are short of interns.
Oh, yes. Mason, these are the slums. Walk through block after block and you won't see a doctor shingle. Not one. The people here are too poor. They know only one healer. The intern and his ambulance.
And tonight, night of mercy and goodwill, they would have cried out in vain.
Well, now that you've come, I won't have to say to the suffering, wait, wait. There's only one ambulance tonight, and that's out on a call. Wait and suffer. I have no one to send to you because Dr. Mason was killed.
It's good that you're here, Mason. It's good.
It's good to be here, Dr. Garrett.
Well, you better get started. Take this slip down to the storeroom. See that they give you a warm sheepskin coat.
Thank you.
And a pair of mittens. From there, you go to the ambulance room. I'll have your driver waiting for you. His name is Mac.
My name is Mac. The chief says I drive your crate tonight.
Crate?
Crate, jalopy, sick buggy, ambulance, take your pick.
Oh, I see what you mean.
You green interns, you're all the same. The first time you spy a ambulance, your eyes pop wide like you've seen a heavenly chariot or something. Not me. I've been driving this old baby for 8 rotten years.
An ambulance, Mac, is a sacred thing. It is a chariot of mercy.
Uh-oh, 2 bells, that says. Come on, Mason, that's your first call.
234 South Street. 234 South Street. 234 South Street.
Look, pal, help me out by watching out for cars cutting in at the cross streets. We don't stop for no red lights. Look, Doc, what did I tell you? Watch it or we'll both be killed. Holy cow, you new interns, you're all alike. You're always dreaming. You put on the white coat and pants and your head goes up in the clouds.
Why are you so bitter, Mac?
Why shouldn't I be bitter? If it wasn't for you, I'd be home with the wife right now.
You truly believe that only because of me...
Yeah. If you hadn't showed up, this ambulance would be parked in the garage, for crying out loud. I would have had the night off like on a decent job.
To you, driving an ambulance is just a job like any other?
Yeah, nothing but...
Boy, will I be glad when the shift is over.
But, Mac, this is Christmas Eve.
You're telling me.
This is one night at least you could forget that driving an ambulance is a job. This one night, you could look upon it as an errand of mercy.
An errand of mercy? You know where we're going?
To help someone afflicted.
Afflicted? Afflicted with alcohol, you mean? I'll give you 2-1 and we're making a stew call.
Stew call?
Yeah, Mason. We're risking our necks tearing through traffic to give some drunk a whiff of smelling salts.
Any man who cries out for help, whether he be brimful of drink or empty of blood... His call shall be answered.
Yes, says you. Okay. Come on, Mason. Make a snap. We ain't got all night. What did I tell you? No good drunk. Here's your bag, Doc.
Thank you, Mac. I won't need it.
But he's out cold, Mason. Come on. Give him a whiff of the stuff quick and we blow.
Quiet, Mac. Come now. Open your eyes, sir.
He calls the drunk, sir. Mason, here's the spirit of ammonia. Hold it under his nose, will you? That always wakes him up.
Quiet, Mac. Come, sir. Open your eyes.
That's right, Mason. You just talk pretty to him and he'll open his eyes.
Where am I? Why is everybody laughing? What's the matter?
Nothing. Just put your arm around my shoulder. That's it. Now, let me help you to stand up straight. There. Now.
You feel better?
Why, suddenly, I feel all right. I feel fine. My head is so clear.
Of course. All you needed was to stand on your own 2 feet. To be strong. Be of good cheer.
Gosh, Doc. That's sure wonderful medicine you give me.
Medicine? What kind of gag you pulling? He didn't give you no medicine. There was nothing the matter with you. You toss off a beer and you lay down in the street like you're out cold and we waste an ambulance on you. I got a mind to take a poke at you.
That'll be enough, Mac. Tell me, sir, what is your name?
Well... If it's all the same to you...
Come on. Give me your name. He's got to make out his report.
Pete Lanton, Doctor.
Peter, you won't lose faith again. You will stand up, self-reliant, and you will face life courageously and with new hope.
Come on, Mason. We ain't got all night. Let's get going.
Doc.
Yes, Peter?
Merry Christmas to you, Doc.
Thank you, sir.
Dr. Mason. Dr. Mason, I'd like to speak to you.
Yes.
Mason, Mac tells me you didn't even open your bag on your first call.
No, it wasn't necessary.
Well, now, don't misunderstand me, Mason. I can't begin to tell you how thankful I am that you're with us this evening, but...
But from now on, I'm not to use suggestion.
Or whatever it was you did use. Please follow standard materia medica in treating your cases. You're not offended.
Of course not.
Oh, that's fine, Dr. Mason. That's your call again.
19 Water Street, third floor. 19 Water Street, third floor.
Well, Mac, you seem to be good at guessing. You were right the last time. What sort of call is this one going to be?
There's no guessing, it's experience. This time it's no drunk.
Oh? What do you think it is?
A birth, or maybe a death.
Christmas Eve. And someone is to live or die. It is better that one should live on Christmas Eve. Mac, let it be a birth we're going to.
It's no difference to me, Doc, a birth or a death. I just try.
How long have you been doing it, Mac?
Ah. Oh, like I told you, 8 rotten years, that's how long.
What you call 8 rotten years were truly 8 glorious years, filled with service to your fellow men.
Cut the chatter, Mason. This is it. Number 19 at Red Brick House upstairs. Come on, make a snappy. It's 3rd floor rear.
Doctor! Doctor, here! Up here!
Keep your shine on, we're coming.
Even if you hurry. Doctor.
Tears on Christmas Eve, young man.
I'm afraid you're too late.
You thought it'd be a point. You're wrong, Mason. It sure looks
Wait,
like...
Wait, Mac. Don't say it. No. Perhaps we're not too late. Tell me, how is the mother?
She's all right. But our baby...
Yes, your baby.
Crippled. Terribly crippled. We prayed for our child to be born on Christmas Eve. We thought we'd be so happy tonight.
Come. No tears. Not on Christmas Eve. I'll have a look at the infant. Wait here, boy.
Make it snappy, Mason. Doc Garrett's always nervous when all the ambulances are out. It's only 9 o'clock. Hey, what's the idea of bringing a kid out here?
Oh, let me hold him, Doctor. Please.
Of course. There you are. Ah, the child knows his father.
Yes. He knows me. But he'll hate me when he's old enough to realize it. Doctor.
Yes?
His arms.
What about the kid's arms?
They're straight. Straight as arrows.
So what?
But before, they were terribly twisted. Both his arms were terribly crippled.
You can see for yourself the child is normal.
But I tell you, before, when I looked at... I swear they were twisted. And now...
You were under great tension. Perhaps your imagination...
Yes. Oh, my little son. Aren't his tiny fingers so tiny?
And now go in and tell your wife truthfully that her baby is normal in every way. Show her.
Yes.
You both look forward to a happy Christmas Eve. It is. Remember, tears are not for Christmas Eve.
Hey. Come on, Mason. Forget all that good fairy stuff. This fella's hopped up enough as is. Let's go.
Yes, Mac.
Oh, Doctor.
Yes?
A Merry Christmas, Doctor.
Thank you. A Merry Christmas to you, sir.
Mason! Dr. Mason!
Yes, Dr. Garrett, you've been looking for
me? Yes, sir.
471 Street.
Only one bell. Go on, Dr. Garrett.
Well, I must speak to you, Mason, about the telegram.
Yes?
The telegram which said that Dr. Mason was killed. The one you said was a mistake.
Did I, Dr. Garrett?
I've just spoken to the sender of that telegram. I have just finished talking to Dr. Mason's mother on the long-distance telephone.
That's my call. I'm sorry, I must go, Dr.
Now, wait, man. I want to talk to you. Listen to me, please. Dr. Mason was killed. Do you hear? 3 hours before you walked into my office, he was killed while driving to the Albany Railroad Station. And his mother saw him die.
Well, Mac, what is this call going to be? A birth or a death?
I don't know, Mason, but I don't like this one. There's something about this call. Give me a funny chill all of a sudden.
Because It's in your neighborhood.
Ah. Well, what do you think this call is going to be?
Because it is your wife.
Ellie!
Is this job a rotten job, Mac? Now that you can rush a doctor to her side? Is this ambulance still a crate? Now that it's speeding to answer your own wife's cry of pain?
Stop that kind of talk, will you? You're trying to make me think something's happened, Ellie. But I ain't afraid. So I'll say it again. Yeah, driving this crate is still a job and a bum one at that.
And the 8 years?
Rotten years. Wasted years. Could have had my own garage and repair business. I'd be in the chips today instead of...
Yes, you would have made more money.
Instead of risking my neck driving all night, twisting in and out of elk pillars, skidding on slippery car tracks.
Why, Mac? Why did you do it?
How many times I gotta tell you that nothing in this whole cockeyed world could have kept me sitting back of this wheel, except my wife. If it wasn't for Ellie,
What's the matter, Mac?
Nothing, I guess. That house we just passed, that was ours. And, the lights are out.
Is that unusual?
No. It just means Ellie ain't home. She's probably going down to the corner as far as the drugstore. Yeah, Ellie walks the dog there every night about this time. And...
Yes, Mac?
The call we're going to is that drugstore.
Yes, Mac.
Mason, you got a hunch what it is? Tell me what it is.
It is not a birth, Mac.
Let me through! Let me through! I did it! Ellie! It's Ellie! Mason, do something! You gotta do something! Please! Please!
We will take her to the hospital, Mac. Let's get ready. The next call will be ours.
812 East River Road.
Yes, you heard. The other ambulance just went out.
Are you crazy? My wife is upstairs in the operating room, and you expect me to leave the hospital? To go out and drive?
There are people who need us, Mac. Our work tonight is not yet finished.
But Ellie needs me. What do I care about other people?
There are people, Mac, who will cry out for help. As your wife did. We will answer.
Not me. I ain't moving.
It is Christmas Eve, Mac.
Christmas Eve. What a Christmas present I got.
64 West Street.
It's our turn, Mac.
64 West Street.
All right, Mason.
64
West
Street.
But this is my last trip for the night. No, not for the night. Forever. I'm through, do you hear? All washed up. For good.
I'm terribly sorry, Mac. We did the best that we could.
Dying. Ellie's dying. And I...
She asked for you, Mac. Just once. It was while you were out on that West Street call. Then she lapsed into coma.
Ellie. Isn't there a chance, Doc Garrett?
I doubt it.
While I'm out with the crate, my wife calls for me, and now she's unconscious. Think of others. Think of others, he said, because it's Christmas Eve. What are you going to say now, Mason? You took me from her. You made me go out and drive that rotten ambulance while she...
You went to help others, to bring aid to the suffering.
A lot of consolation, that is.
Remember how the old woman blessed you, with tears in her eyes.
Oh, I can't think of nothing, but Ellie's gone. You with your big ideas and your fine speeches. What do you know about sorrow and suffering?
All that there is to know, my son.
Just now when you said that for a second, you got old. You look more than 1,000 years old. God, I must be seeing things on account Ellie is leaving me, and I'm crazy. Crazy with grief and sorrow.
Grief and sorrow for you. Yet how much you did to relieve others of that pain.
It It's funny, Mason, but...
Yes, Mac.
When you said those words, I thought of my 8 years. The 8 rotten years. And they didn't seem so bad. Not anymore. Now I kind of like them.
Sorrow worketh repentance. You should, Mac. You should glory in them. 8 years of bringing a healer to the suffering. 8 years of rushing the torn and the smashed to the hands of the mender.
Yeah. Your words, they just take the pain right out of me. They just draw it out.
Now that your work for this night is finished, Mac, I will walk home with you.
Go home? While Elliot...
Yes.
Okay, if you say so, Mason. But for the life of me, I don't know why I'd take your word. What a break. What a rotten break I got on Christmas Eve.
You love her a great deal, don't you?
Yeah.
Soon, it will be midnight.
A Merry Christmas.
How did she greet you each night when you returned from your driving?
How did Ellie greet... Why do you ask that, Mason?
Tell me, Mac. I want you to say it.
Well, she...
Tell me.
She's like a happy, anxious kid. She'd go out and put on a porch light. Didn't matter even if the weather was terrible. I used to bawl her out for it. Tell her she'd catch pneumonia. But she'd always put on a porch light and stand outside there waiting.
Waiting for her shining knight returning from his errands of mercy.
As soon as she'd see me come around the next corner, she'd call to me.
And now, will you continue your driving?
I'm sticking to it, Mason. Even though Ellie won't be around, I'm sticking.
This is your corner.
Yeah.
Look to your house, my son.
The light. A porch light. It's on. Mason. Your eyes. Mason. Mason. Where are you?
Look to your house, my son.
No! It can't be!
Mac!
It's Ellie! Ellie, darling, it is you!
Mac!
Thank God! Thank God! And forgive me, I... did not know who you were.
I've just heard the 6th annual Pillsbury presentation of Grand Central Station's traditional Christmas drama.
Grand Central Station on Tuned to Yesterday from December 24th, 1949 on CBS. This is an hour of Christmas shows on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Lavonier. Now time for the Great Gildersleeve, always bringing Christmas to their program. In this episode, it would be their 9th time on NBC, where 15.5 million people were tuned in on a Wednesday night at 8:30. This was heard on December 14th, 1949.
The Kraft Foods Company, makers of Kraft quality foods, presents Harold Perry as the Great Gildersleeve. Gildersleeve. The Great Gildersleeve is brought to you by the Kraft Foods Company, makers of the famous cheese food Velveeta. Everybody goes for Velveeta's rich yet mild cheddar cheese flavor in snacks, in sandwiches, and in hot dishes. And Velveeta, you know, helps supply important food values from milk and is as digestible as milk itself. That's why smart homemakers keep Velveeta on hand regularly to spread or slice and to melt for grand economical hot dishes. Tomorrow, get Velveeta, the cheese food of Kraft quality. Well, it's a crisp, cold night in Summerfield. Here and there, a lighted Christmas tree glows warmly in a window. Holly wreaths have begun to appear. The ground is white with new snow, and it's still falling. Big fat flakes that cling to the porches and the trees, and to the brim of the great Gildersleeve's hat as he hurries down his front steps. Makes a cautious turn as he reaches the sidewalk, and then strides gaily up the street toward Catherine Milford's house.
Deck the halls with boughs of holly, fa-la-la-la-la, la-la-la-la. Tis the season to be jolly, fa-la-la-la-la.
Help!
What?
Wait for me!
Leroy, I wouldn't run so fast. These sidewalks are slippery.
Sure, I can slide even. Look here.
Yeah, pretty good. This is one time those big feet come in handy. Better than skis, Leroy.
Where are you going, Unc?
Well, I thought I'd be dropping in at Miss Milford's for a while this evening.
Can I walk with you? I'm going to Piggy's house. They're putting up their tree tonight. We're going to decorate it.
Well, good. Don't stand on the furniture.
You going to help Miss Milford decorate her tree?
Well, you can never tell, Leroy. We may string a few cranberries, drape the icicles around.
What if Dr. Olson is there?
Leroy, don't you worry about Dr. Olson.
I'm not. But you said he was a pain in the neck. You said he was always hanging around her house when you wanted to be there.
Well, you weren't supposed to have heard that, but it used to be that way.
How is it now?
Yeah. Suffice it to say, my boy, that your old uncle has the situation very well under control. The fact is, I haven't seen Dr. Clarence Q. Olson in over 3 weeks.
Gee, then you're winning, aren't you, Hunk?
You bet I'm winning.
Golly, you gotta be smart to be the doctor, too.
You said it.
Gee, and you're my uncle.
Yeah.
Well, here's Piggy's house. See you later, Unc.
Yeah, see you later, Leroy. Yes, sir, there's a mighty fine boy.
Well, Throckmorton.
Hello, Catherine.
Come on in. My, it's snowing out, isn't it?
Well, just a little.
Look at you. You have a big snowflake right in the end of your nose.
I do? Well, cold nose, warm heart.
Let me take your coat.
Thank you. Well, beautiful tree, Catherine. And Christmas presents. All those for me?
No, but you can help me finish wrapping them.
Fine. A lot of presents.
Well, Mother and I have a lot of relatives.
Oh, sure.
Then I couldn't forget those darling children down at the hospital.
Oh?
There are 5 of them that Santa Claus may not remember.
Well, good for you, Catherine. Be a shame if any little kiddies were forgotten on Christmas.
Mm. Here, put your finger on this ribbon while I tie the knot, huh?
Kind of cold. I'll try it. Yeah. Well, interesting paper you're using, Catherine. Mistletoe design.
Just put the package over there.
Huh? No, I think I'll balance it right on top of your head.
Throckmorton.
And you know what that means, mistletoe.
Aren't you rushing the season a little?
Well, I don't know. Only 9 more shopping days left.
You better put the package down there by the tree.
Oh, shucks. Say, here's a fancy-looking package.
I think that's Mother's gift to me.
Your mother couldn't wait, eh? Let me shake this. But I guess what's in it.
Now, Throckmorton.
Oop. Card fell off.
Oh, dear.
Well. Isn't that just like your mother? To the dearest girl in the world, Clarence. Clarence!
Throckmorton, give me the package. That one isn't from Mother.
Oh, I guess not. Dr. Clarence Olson, the intern, eh? I thought he'd given up.
Clarence has been on night duty at the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
I can hardly wait to open his present. He always thinks of the most original things.
Well, I haven't brought you my present yet. I'm liable to think of something pretty original, too.
Oh? Give me a hint.
Hint? Well?
At the hospital, Clarence keeps teasing me about what's in this package.
Oh, he does he?
All he'll tell me is that it starts with a K for Catherine. Isn't that clever?
Well, I guess there's a fine line between being clever and being corny.
Now, Throckmorton, he's very ingenious. In fact, the mistletoe paper was his idea.
It was? Well, might have been his idea, but I was the first one who thought of holding it over your head. I think. Coming, Bertie. Wish I knew what that fellow Olson is giving Catherine for Christmas. I'll have to go on one better.
Good morning, Unky.
Hi, Unky.
Good morning, children. Gruel. Marjorie, what Christmas presents can you think of that starts with the letter K?
K? Well,
who's the present for, Unc? A little kid we know spelled K-I-D?
Hardly, Leroy. I was thinking about something for a young lady.
Oh, you mean me?
Well, we'll get around to you children later. There's a present under Miss Milford's tree, and it starts with a K. I'm trying to think what it is.
Forgot what you gave her, Hunk.
I haven't done my shopping yet, Leroy. This was from somebody else.
Oh-ho.
What do you mean, oh-ho?
Oh, it's Miss Milford's present from Dr. Olson, isn't it?
Well, yes.
Well, if it's from the doc, why do you want to know what it is, Hunk?
Well, I don't want to give her the same present, Leroy. I'd like to give her something a little better.
Well, if it starts with a K, maybe it's a Kodak, Unky.
Kodak? No, it's a pretty big package.
I know, Unc. It's a kangaroo.
Okay. I doubt that, Leroy. Dr. Olson isn't that ingenious.
Canary?
I don't think it's alive, Leroy. As I recall, canary doesn't start with a K.
Like some hot coffee, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Thank you, Bertie. It could be knickknacks.
No, sir, this is coffee.
What?
Bertie, we're trying to think of some gift a woman would like, starting with K.
Oh?
Any ideas, Bertie? I'm getting them from everybody. And some pretty bad ones.
Well, if it's for a woman, maybe it's something for the kitchen.
Kitchen? Well, I can't think of anything for the kitchen that starts with a K. Except Kraft cheese.
I can't think of anything.
Maybe it's kisses, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Kisses?
The candy type, you know, candy kisses wrapped in paper.
Oh, my goodness, a kitchen hillbilly. That Dr. Olson. Wish I'd thought of giving her something starting with K for Catherine. I could give her something starting with G for Gildersleeve. Nah, that's not the same idea. Let's see. K. Carrot. He could be giving her a diamond. He wouldn't dare. Kettle drums. Kilts. He wouldn't give her those. She'd look cute in kilts, though.
Well, good morning, Gildy.
Well, the Honorable Judge Hooker. Good morning, Horace.
You were walking along with a faraway look in your eye. Were you dreaming of a white Christmas?
Old goat. I'm trying to get an idea about a Christmas present for Miss Milford, Horace.
Oh? Have you tried looking in the stores?
No. Thanks for the idea.
Not at all. But if you're going to do any shopping, Gildy, you better get busy or there won't be anything left.
Don't you worry, Judge. You'll get your necktie.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. But I didn't mean that, Gildy. It just seems that everybody I know has been Christmas shopping. I bumped into Floyd, Chief Gates, your current amour, Miss Milford.
Oh?
And yesterday I even ran into your arch rival, Dr. Olson.
Olson? Where did you run into him, Horace?
Why, Hogan Brothers, but why are you so excited, Gildy?
Now we're getting someplace. What department was he in?
Well, as I recall, he was in the gift shoppy.
Oh? Do you remember who waited on Olson? What did the sales girl look like?
Sales girl? Well, dark wavy hair parted in the middle, black mustache.
Black mustache?
Oh, no. I'm thinking of the floor walker.
Well, think a little harder, Judge. What did the sales girl look like? I've got to talk to her.
Well, as I recall, she was rather tall.
Oh?
Or was she short? That's it, a short brunette.
Good.
Or was she a blonde?
Oh, my goodness. Judge, come along with me and point her out.
Gladly, Gildy. She was pretty, as I recall. Or was she?
Yes. Look at all those shoppers. Stay right behind me, Judge.
Don't you worry about me, Gildy. If I start losing ground, I'll grab you by the coattails.
Oh, pardon me, miss. Madam. Oop.
Are you
Excuse me, coming through. Yeah, here's the gift shop. Now, where's the sales girl, Horace?
There she is at the end of the counter.
Oh?
Are you being helped?
Not yet, miss. I'd like a little information.
Yes, sir?
Dr. Clarence Olson, a friend of mine, was in your department yesterday and bought something.
As I recall, he was carrying a little black bag, and he placed it on your counter here.
I seem to remember that.
Yes, he's a tall young man with blonde wavy hair.
Oh, you mean the tall, handsome blonde man.
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to say he's handsome.
That sounds like Dr. Olson to me.
Please, Horace. Miss, do you remember what he bought?
Well, he looked at several things.
He did. We're on the right track, Judge. Now I'll find out what he got for Catherine.
I showed him a diamond necklace like this.
The diamond necklace?
My.
But he didn't buy it.
Good.
Then he looked at these watches.
Platinum.
But he didn't buy one.
Young lady, what did he buy?
Well, he just bought something for $5.
Only $5, cheapskate. I'll buy Catherine something more expensive than that.
My, nothing like the true Christmas spirit.
All right, Judge. Young lady, what did Dr. Olson buy?
He went down to the next counter and bought a pair of suspenders.
Suspenders?
That's easy, Gildy. Now you can buy Catherine a nice pipe.
Is there something I can show you?
You can show me the way out.
Well, there's a fancy Christmas package under the tree at Catherine Milford's house from Gildersleeve's rival, Dr. Olson. What's in it? That's what the water commissioner would like to know.
Well, whatever it is, I'll get her something better. He may have the edge on me at the hospital, but by George, I'll beat him under the Christmas tree. I'll go all out. Hello, P.V.
Hello, Mr. Gildersleeve. What can I do for you this afternoon?
Well, I'm looking for a Christmas present, P.V., for a lady. Something extra special.
A gift for Miss Milford, is it?
You bet. Mm-hmm. That sneaky Dr. Olson bought her something that looks pretty nice. And I'm going to go him one better. I'm going to get her something so beautiful and so clever, it'll make him look silly.
My.
Any suggestions, Peavy?
Well, what does she like? Has she dropped any hint?
No. Lately, all she talks about is those little kids she takes care of at the hospital. It must be something clever and original I could get for her, Peavy.
Well, how about a year's subscription to Reader's Digest?
Year's subscription?
Or how about a nice set of scales? Women like to weigh themselves, you know.
Peavy, she can weigh herself at the hospital.
Does she like sweetmeats?
Sweetmeats?
We have some very attractive boxes of candied prunes. Quite helpful, too.
No, Peavy.
How about some musical bath salts?
No.
Ballpoint pen?
No.
Mr. Gildersleeve, you're rather hard to please.
Oh. Peavy, I've got to get something different, something original. Now, you've had plenty of experience at this Christmas thing.
That's true.
You've been buying Christmas presents for Mrs. Peavy for 20 years.
Yes, I have.
Well, certainly after all that time, a man should know what it takes to please a woman.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that.
Oh, my goodness. I can see you're going to be of no help at all, Peavy. I'm going back downtown.
That's a good idea. Happy shopping, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Happy shopping to you. Brother, what a mob in this store. Why does everybody wait till the last minute to buy their Christmas presents? Watch it, madam. Wonder if Catherine would like an alligator bag. I don't think she likes alligators. I don't either. to look around some more. Excuse me. Pardon me. Ow! That's my foot, lady.
Going up, please.
Oh, where's everybody rushing to? Huh? The elevator. Hey, I don't want to get on this elevator. Oh, watch it. Well, I'm in whether I want to be or not.
Second floor, phonographs, radios, toys.
Out on two, please. Thank you. Might get her a radio. No, everybody has a radio. Have to be more original than that. I'm going to beat that slick intern. Wish I had chairs around here. My feet hurt. Might just as well sit on this little red wagon a minute. Well, cute toys up here.
Is that you, Miss Gilsleeve?
Well, hello, Bertie. What are you doing up here in toys?
Oh, I got a lot of little nieces and nephews I have to buy for.
Oh, yes.
They don't have much, and when I show up on Christmas with my arms full of toys, they think I'm some pumpkin.
Yeah, I bet they do, Bertie. Say, what if I showed up with an armful of toys for those kiddies at the hospital? The ones Miss Milford is so fond of.
Them children would think you were some pumpkins, too, Mr. Gilsleeve.
Say, I guess they would. What's more, I'd be some pumpkins with Miss Milford, too.
Yes, sir.
You bet. There's nothing I could do that would impress her more. By George, this is a great idea we had, Bertie. Clerk! Clerk, I want to buy some toys. Oop, what was that?
That's the wagon you just bought.
Okay, I'll buy it. And half the toy department, too. Clerk, what an idea. Dr. Olson could never top this. I'll walk in on Catherine, pass out these toys to her little kiddies, and tell her this is my Christmas present to her. What can she say except that I'm the greatest guy in the world? The kids will get a kick out of it, too. Intern, turn in your suit. Hey, this must be the ward. I see some children there. Well, hello, little children.
Hello.
Hello. Where's Miss Milford?
She'll be back. She went to get orange juice.
Oh? Well, I'll just put these packages down here and wait.
Are you Santa Claus?
Me?
Nah, he's not Santa Claus. He hasn't got a white beard.
But he's nice and fat.
Yeah, but he's not Santa Claus. Santa Claus never comes around here.
Now, wait a minute, young fellow. I'm sort of a Santa Claus. I brought all these presents to you children.
For us? Honest and truly?
Oh, boy!
You see, Stuffy, he is Santa Claus.
Oh, boy, I gotta come over and see them.
Stuffy's lucky. He's in a wheelchair.
Oh. Well, I'll bring the presents around to your little beds when Miss Milford comes.
I want to open mine.
Now, wait a minute, Stuffy. You shouldn't open presents until Christmas.
I don't want to open mine until Christmas. I just want to dream about what's in them.
That's the idea, little girl.
While we're waiting for Miss Milford, will you read us a Christmas story?
A Christmas story?
That's what she was doing.
Yeah, they're in that book.
Oh, well, I like stories. I used to read them to my niece and nephew. Let's see what we've got here. Why the Chimes Rang by Raymond McDonald Alden.
I like that one.
I don't know it.
Well, I've been in the hospital longer than you have.
Yes, well, let's read it, huh? We don't have much time. Once upon a time, in a faraway country, there was a wonderful church. It stood on a high hill in the midst of a great city. And every Sunday, as well as on sacred days like Christmas, thousands of people climbed the hill to its great archways, looking like lines of ants, all moving in the same direction.
They don't allow ants in the hospital.
Stop interrupting, Stuffy.
Yeah, must listen, Stuffy. Now, all the people knew that at the top of the tower was a chime of Christmas bells. They had hung there ever since the church had been built, and they were the most beautiful bells in the world. Some described them as sounding like angels far up in the sky. Others as sounding like strange winds singing through the trees. But for many years, they had never been heard.
Why didn't the bells ring?
Well, we're coming to that, I guess. It was said that people had been growing less careful of their gifts for the Christ child, that no offering was brought which was fine enough to deserve the music of the chimes. Every Christmas Eve, people still crowded to the altar, each one trying to bring some gift better than any other.
Why do they do that?
Well, for personal reasons, I guess. They were trying to make a big impression.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Now, where were we? Oh, yes. Now, a number of miles from the city, in a little country village, lived a boy named Pedro and his little brother. They had heard of the service in the church on Christmas Eve and planned to go see the beautiful celebration. Nobody can guess, little brother, Pedro would say, all the fine things there are to see and hear. And I've even heard it said that the Christ child sometimes comes down to bless the service. What if we should see him? The day before Christmas, Pedro and little brother were able to slip away quietly, and although the walking was hard in the frosty air, before nightfall they had trudged so far, hand in hand, that they saw the lights of the big city just ahead of them. They were about to enter one of the great gates in the wall that surrounded it, when they saw something dark on the snow near their path, and they stepped aside to look at it.
What was it?
Well, let's see. There by the path was a poor woman who had fallen in the snow, too sick and tired to get in where she might have found shelter.
Oh.
Pedro knelt down beside her. You will have to go on alone, little brother, he said. Alone, cried little brother. But you'll not see the Christmas festival. No, said Pedro, and he could not keep back a bit of a choking sound in his throat. See this poor woman? Her face looks like the Madonna in the chapel window. And she'll freeze to death if nobody cares for her. But I can't bear to leave you and go on alone, said little brother. Both of us need not miss the service, said Pedro. And it had better be I than you. You can easily find your way to the church, and you must see and hear everything twice, little brother. Once for you and once for me. And oh, if you get a chance, little brother, to slip up to the altar without getting in anybody's way, take this little silver piece of mine and lay it down for my offering when no one is looking. In this way, he hurried little brother off to the city and winked hard to keep back the tears as he heard the crunching footsteps sounding farther and farther away in the twilight. The great church was wonderful that night. When the organ played and the thousands of people sang, the walls shook with the sound, and little Pedro, way outside the city wall, felt the earth tremble around him. At the close of the service came the procession for the offerings to be laid on the altar. Rich men and great men marched proudly up to lay down their gifts to the Christ child. Some brought wonderful jewels, some brought baskets of gold, but the chimes did not ring. And last of all came the king of the country, hoping with all the rest to win for himself the chime of the Christmas bells. There went a great murmur through the church as the people saw the king take from his head the royal crown, all set with precious stones, and lay it gleaming on the altar as his offering to the Holy Child. Surely, everyone said, we shall hear the bells now, for nothing like this has ever happened before. But still, only the cold old wind was heard in the tower, and the people shook their heads, and some of them said, as they had said before, that they never really believed the story of the chimes and doubted if they ever rang at all. Suddenly, everyone looked at the old minister, who was standing by the altar, holding up his hand for silence. Not a sound could be heard from anyone in the church, but as all the people strained their ears to listen, there came softly but distinctly, swinging through the air, the sound of the chimes in the tower. So far away, and yet so clear the music seemed, so much sweeter were the notes than anything that had been heard before, rising and falling away up there in the sky, that the people in the church sat for a moment as still as though something held each of them by the shoulders. And they all stood up together and stared straight at the altar to see what great gift had awakened the long, silent bell. But all that the nearest of them saw was the childish figure of little brother, who had crept softly down the aisle when no one was looking, and had laid Pedro's little piece of silver on the altar.
That's a wonderful story. Why did the bells ring when the little brother laid the piece of silver on the altar?
Well,
why didn't they ring when the great men brought jewels and things?
Well, like the book said, each one was trying to bring some gift better than any other. Those men were trying to outdo each other. While little Pedro gave out of the goodness of his heart. He didn't have an ulterior motive.
What's an ulterior motive?
Well, I guess that's what I had when I came here.
That's Miss Milford coming.
It is?
Yeah.
Well, guess I'll be going.
Aren't you going to wait and see our nurse? Where are you going, mister?
Well, I think I'll sneak out this side door.
But how'd she know who brought the presents?
Well, that's not important anymore. Merry Christmas.
Thanks. Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas.
Tiptoe down the back steps. 5 o'clock. I didn't know the hospital had chimes.
Great Gildersleeve on Tuned to Yesterday from the 14th of December 1949 on NBC, bringing to a close this hour of Christmas programs on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Happy holidays.